gather. Same way as we gather. And this is what I'm trying to say, and tried to say last week, and trying to say this week, is that in us is the spiritual thing where God says, no man can come. Jesus says, no man can come to me except the Father draw him. Jesus says, except I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. But then he says, you go. Now, is that a contradiction? Or is that two aspects of the keys of the kingdom of heaven coming together into my life and into your life to become church at its best? We have heavenly things and earthly things coming together into our lives to go out and to gather. Are with me? And this is what I'm trying to say to us. This is that in each one of us is the Spirit of the living God. Now, he's not contradicting himself, because in John chapter 14, he says, if you love me, and if you do what I ask you to do, you obey my commands, then the Father will love you, and we, he and I, will make our abode in you or with you. The prerequisites are that I love him and I obey him, then I carry him with me wherever I go. Lo, I am with you always. And wherever I go, in Jerusalem, or Judea, or Samaria, or to the uttermost parts of the earth, let's take that out of Churchese. Wherever I go, in Lafayette, or Ringgold, or Somerville, or Chattanooga, or Atlanta, or Haiti, or Trinidad, wherever I go, guess what? I am a light to the world. And within me is the ability to draw people to Jesus Christ. It's not something I have to pray up. It's not something I have to work up. It's not something the preacher has to preach to me and condemn me up with. I have to realize that within me is God working and drawing people. Within me is Jesus working and drawing people. All I've got to do is get around people. It's that simple. Because if I'm around them, something in me is going to naturally draw them. Now, let me catch you up here on your fill-ins. Number one, the keys to the kingdom of heaven operate in heaven spiritually and in earth naturally, opening and closing. You see that? I've heard so many messages on the keys of the kingdom. This is one of the best things the Lord has ever shown me. They're resources. The keys of the kingdom are resources that the church can access from heaven and in earth to become a church that hell cannot stop. Number two, the good news we saw in the good news we saw that Jesus is the Christ with all authority in heaven, spiritual, and earth, natural. He says, therefore, go. Because all authority has been given to me in heaven and earth now, therefore you go. Because I'll provide for you anything you need to go. I'll provide for you any need that you have, any resource that you need. I will provide it for you because I've got power over all of it. You just go. Number three, in gifts, there are spiritual or heavenly gifts, 1 Corinthians 12, and earthly or natural gifts. Which ones do we need? You need both of those. The church at its best needs both of those. And this, let me tell you, LifeGate can't have them unless you have them. Does that make sense to you? Unless we have these things, the church doesn't have these things. Okay, now that's kind of where we're at. Number four, let's go ahead and do it. Jesus said that no one could be gathered to him unless the Father of heaven drew that person. Jesus also told us to go into all the earth and gather people. Is that what he said? He says, nobody can come to me except the Father draw him. Is that what he said? And Jesus says, if I'm lifted up, I'll draw all men to me. That's heaven. But then he says, you go. Now, that's not a contradiction. That's just the way it works. Because unless I go, he can't. Where is he? Is he up there on a chair somewhere? Or is he really living in me? By the Spirit of God, when the Spirit of God comes upon my life and upon your life, what does the Spirit of God bring with him? The presence of the Father, the presence of the Son, and the presence of the Holy Spirit in my life. And they abide with me. They make their abode with me. And wherever I go, they go. And if I don't go, they don't go either. Now, if this is true, how many people can come except the Father draw? How many? That then means, if that is true, if the Bible is true, that then means that every person that I'm looking at and every person that has ever become a believer then has been drawn by someone. Someone has affected each of our lives to the point that it drew us into the presence of God, that it drew us to Jesus Christ. If this is true, if no man can come except the Father draw him, then nobody can come. No one can come except they are drawn through that Spirit through another person. Now, I want you to think a minute. Maybe it will immediately come to you who it was that God used that manifested himself in their life to you to draw you into the kingdom. Maybe it'll take you a while. But I promise you there is someone. Someone became a light to you. Now let me carry it a little bit further. You are becoming a light to someone. Someone is watching you. Someone is observing you. Someone is looking into your life, and it will draw them or repel them. This is the way we become witnesses. Now, let me tell you about my experience. The year was 1977. I was coaching Lance in Little League Baseball. The year previous to that, in 1976, I had coached together with a person that became a very good friend of mine. His name was Billy Shira. And Billy and I were party buddies. We did a lot of stuff together. We would party together. And I knew Billy very well. And we coached together in 1976. He had one son older than Lance and one son younger than Lance. And at this particular time, all of our boys were in the same league, and they played on the same team, and he and I coached together. And I think that year we had a very successful year. Either we won the tournament or the playoffs, or either we ran up. We were second or first. It doesn't matter. But we had a really good year, and we had a lot of fun together. That was in 1976. Well, in the first of 1977, Billy got saved. I heard Billy got saved. And I can remember thinking, yeah, this will last about 2 weeks. Because I knew Billy. And I knew Billy was a party guy. I mean, he was a wild dude. And I remember thinking, you know, this is about 2 weeks. It's going to last about 2 weeks. Well, it didn't. Billy stuck. Billy became very faithful in his church. He was always there. And I kept hearing good things about Billy and how his life was changing. In 1977, I continued coaching Lance in the league that we were in. Well, Billy moved up a league. And he went to the next league up with his oldest son. And one day we had a Wednesday night game, and it was scheduled to be at 7 o'clock. Well, we got to the park, as we always did, a little bit early, and we begin getting all our players together, see who's there, who's not there, and all this stuff. Well, Billy is playing on the field that we'll be playing on, and his game was at 6 o'clock. His game was right before us. He had the field that we would have. And so we got all of our guys together, and we were sitting there watching them play, watching Billy's team play. Well, around 6:30 or so, Billy begins collecting all of his family. Now, he begins getting his son off the team, and you have to realize that his son was the best player on that team. Also, Billy is a control freak. He loved to control everything. And he's one of the most competitive people I've ever met in my whole life. He loved to win. But Billy begins collecting his family, his younger son and his daughter and his wife, and they get together and they leave the ball field, and the game is half over. They leave the ball field and they go get in their car and they go to church. Now, that is really strange because I knew Billy. Billy spoke to my life by never speaking. Something was more important to Billy than winning. Something was more important to Billy than controlling. Something was more important to Billy than anything else. He just handed it over to his assistant coach, and he went off to church. And I'm sitting there thinking, wow, Billy's got something I don't have. Billy's got something going on in his life that I have not experienced yet, because I know this guy. This guy is one of the most competitive people. He's got something, or he could not have left this field. Without speaking to me, he spoke to me, and God began drawing me through the man, through the life of that man. Now, here's what happened. Billy sold real estate. And a couple of days after that, and as weeks progressed, I would find myself stopping by and talking to Billy. I would just stop by his office. I would go into his office, and we'd sit there and we'd talk. And I would begin asking him questions. Billy, tell me about your life. Tell me what happened to you. How did you get saved? And he would tell me. I would say, well, tell me about the church. And he would tell me. I says, now this is this church down on High Falls Road, right? And he says, yeah. And he would tell me about the pastor, because I was asking. He didn't come to me preaching this stuff, telling me I was going to go to hell unless I received Jesus Christ. Something in Billy began drawing me, and I began seeking that light. When witnessing is done the way the Bible says it's supposed to be done, it's as natural as breathing. When witnessing really is permeating out of our life, when we're really shining, when something's coming out of us, people will come to us and ask us, what happened to you? Where did you go? Where do you go? What do you believe? Tell me about your testimony. See, somehow, and this is what I was trying to say last week, is that we've got this thing, whole thing turned around upside down, where we believe that we've got to go out and tell everybody. Now, surely we should talk about it, should we not? I think that's a given, that we go out, and when we're given the opportunity, and we can, we should tell about our faith and our love of Jesus Christ and our church and all of those things. But there should be people coming and asking us. This is last week about the place that I fit in the fish story. Remember the fish story? I want to change it this week. I want to tell you about a deer story. It's more hunting season right now, so I'll tell you a deer story. Something should be coming out of us that people are drawn to. But when they look into us, they need to find what they're looking for. I think we can turn the heat up a little bit now, Randy. I see a couple of the ladies starting to bundle. Let me say that again. There's a light coming out of our lives. There's a drawing that naturally happens. And people will draw up to us and look to see what's really in there. This was a long time ago. Say a long time ago. A long time ago. This is BJ, before Jesus and me. Because what I'm going to tell you is not the right thing to do. I used to deer hunt like I fish. I was good at it, too. I mean, I would always get more than enough. and so this particular year, it was opening day, and Judy was going with me this particular opening day Saturday. And so we load up, and it's pre-daylight. And so we go, and I put her in her tree stand, and I walk down about 300 yards, and I get in my tree stand, and we're just sitting there waiting on it to get light. And we had decided that we would hunt until 10 o'clock. And so we're sitting there, and it's just breaking daylight, and I'm hearing this noise down around my stand. And just as I'm straining to see, and finally at 6:30, there is a really nice six-point buck right there at my stand. So I harvested that buck, and he's laying right there, and I see him well. And he's not going anyplace, and it's only 6:30 in the morning. And so I say, you know, I'm not going to get down and drive my truck down and load this thing up and mess up everyone else in their hunting. So I'm going to just sit here for a little while, and maybe another one would come by. Well, you know what happened? Another one did come by. It's 7:30. Here comes another one, a nice eight-point buck. Walks up. I think he's going to come talk to this one that's laying on the ground. He walks up there. I harvested that one also. and it's only 7:30. And I'm saying, well, I'm not going to get down yet because I just don't want to go mess up everyone else's hunting. And you have to realize I wasn't neither the religious person nor the legal person. And maybe another one might come by, you know. So I sit there. Sure enough, guess what happens? 8:30. Here comes another one, a 9-pointer. And I think he's going to walk up and talk to these two. It's amazing. I harvested that one. I've got three, a 6-pointer, an 8-pointer, and a 9-pointer laying within, right at me. And so I say, wow. Now, it's 8:30 in the morning, and I'm saying, you know, I really don't want to be sitting here in this stand. If someone were to walk up that had a badge, and I had three animals here, this would not be real. I need to get down now. So I get down, and I go up to the truck, and I messed around for a little while, and I'm just kind of waiting for time and waiting to go get her. So somewhere, I guess, around 9:30 or so, I come driving down to Judy's tree stand, and she gets in the truck, and she said, someone shot down your way about 6:30. Who was that? I said, that was me. She says, well, someone shot down that way also about 7:30. Who was that? I said, that was me. And then with this really look on her face, like, you didn't, did you? She said, someone also shot about 8:30. Who was that? And I said, that was me. I need one of your tags. So we go load up these deer, and I legally tag them. And we go to the campsite, and all the hunters, you know, oh, wow, where were you? How did you do it? You know, what is going on? And so they would come, and all the hunters would come and look at my truckload of deer in the back of my truck. There was just these three nice, huge bucks back there, you know, all piled up like stove wood back there. And so then we left, and it's cold, so I could drive around and show off my hunt, you know. So I drive up to stores and our relatives' houses and all this stuff. And I don't care who you were. I don't care if you were a woman or a child. I don't care or a hunter or a non-hunter. It did not matter. People were coming from everywhere to come out and look into my truck and see what was in there. And they might not even know that there were deer in there. They just saw people looking. And so they wanted to come and see what they were looking at. And so people just from men and women and boys and girls, hunters and non-hunters, people just coming to see what was in my truck. Now here's my moral. Here's what I'm trying to say to us. When people come and look in our truck, what do they see? Are you successful in life? Or is it empty? Is the bed a mess? Just pieces of wood and rope and all kinds of stuff and trash scattered back there? Or is there really something back there for people to see? Because people are coming. You have an ability to draw people to your life, and they're coming. And they're going to look. And you may have old rusty chains. They don't want to see rusty chains. They don't want to see bondage. They don't want to see garbage and trash bags and beer cans and all that stuff back there. They want to see something that'll change their lives. And let me tell you, everybody's going to be looking. Old people, young people. Do you older folks realize that children watch you? Not just your kids. Everybody is built with a unique ability within you to draw. It's God. It's Jesus. And all you've got to do is lift Jesus and say, I go to church. And guess what they start doing? They start watching. They want to see what's in your truck. That's all you got to do. And especially if you say, I go to LifeGate. You understand what I'm trying to say? This is what I was attempting to say last week. And I've tried to say it yesterday also. But last week, what I'm trying to say is people are looking. And after they look at a couple of years at us, somehow we lose their interest. Somehow we haven't changed. Somehow we've let garbage get in the back of our truck, and they're really not that interested in what's back there anymore. We were talking about this past week, and I could use nearly anyone in this church, nearly any person that has attended here for any length of time, but a couple of people I just want to mention to you, and their families, how they've changed. And I was thinking about Jim and Nancy Kittle and their family. I called Nancy to make sure. Yesterday to make sure all my facts were right. But when they began coming here, Jim was working in a boiler room. Nancy was wrapping meat. And there's nothing wrong with those things. You understand what I'm saying. But they had dreams. They had aspirations of doing more. They wanted more than that. And so Jim left his job and began working for a heating and air company. He began learning that, and he enjoyed that. And so what he did was begin going to school. He enjoyed it so much. And his intentions after he began going to school and began doing well with his schooling and learned and found out that that's really what he would like to do with his life, he began making plans to purchase the company that he was working for. It never worked out. Different kinds of things happened. But eventually it did come to a place where Jim created his own company. And now he has his own business. See, that's the kingdom, people. And when you look in Jim's life, you see something. You see success. You see someone who the Lord came into their life and changed that life in such a drastic fashion. Got all the stuff out of there and the chains out of there and the garbage and gave it something that people can look in now and really see God working in that life. Nancy was wrapping meat, and there's nothing wrong with wrapping meat, Doug. I'm just using this as an example. But she wanted to do more. She wanted to stay home with her family. Finally, she got those kids gone. And she wanted to teach school. And they kept asking her to come and teach school. Now she's a teacher. See, when he comes and he makes his abode in us, our lives are supposed to change. And our light should get...